You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 191 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Understanding Society Through Spiritual Scientific Knowledge. Social Threefolding, Christ, Lucifer, and Ahriman. 15 lectures translated by Matthew Barton. This is the last lecture in this cycle, Lecture 15, given in Dornach on the 15th of November, 1919. Yesterday I drew your attention to the kind of primordial knowledge, the Ur-wisdom, that possessed the human soul, and how into our own time this slowly dried up, was exhausted, until people across the civilized world came to feel ever more reliant, for their knowledge and insight, on what they can draw from physical existence. By knowledge and insight, I do not just mean science or academic knowledge, but what lives as consciousness in people's ordinary lives. Standing on the foundation of spiritual science, we must, of course, first ask how this primordial wisdom arose for humanity. And now I must highlight, from new perspectives, things we have often discussed in the past from a different angle. Let us look back to the time when the human being began to become, we can say, a citizen of the earth, descending with his being of spirit and soul to the actual earth, mantling himself with the forces of the earth to become an earthly being in the earthly sphere. If the human being had descended to the earth only with the preconditions implicit in his own nature, humanity would inevitably have evolved in a quite different way from how it did in reality through the various cultural epochs. People at that time would have had to begin with a particular relationship to the world around them. They would have had to acquire a knowledge of the earth through instincts, not precisely clairvoyant, but clairvoyant in some degree. For a long time, they would have remained inept, childlike beings. By our era, however, they would have worked their way through to a certain soul and bodily nature, with human qualities, but would not have reached anything like the spiritual or mental heights that they have. We must thank the beings we have always referred to as Luciferic, for the fact that human beings have been able to evolve other than through many phases of childhood. These Luciferic beings interwove themselves with Earth evolution to bring this about. Now we also know that a Lucifer individuality himself incarnated in Asia at a particular point in pre-Christian times, and was the originating source of pagan Ur-wisdom, in particular of the kind that we can still discern by studying historical facts. In what we might call the play of humanity's evolution, the Luciferic beings, however, were always present. Now I want to ask you very seriously, although I'm aware how little notice is taken, really, of such pleas, not to be smug or philistine when thinking of the being of Lucifer. A great many of those who feel part of the anthroposophic movement tend to repudiate Lucifer. I have often spoken of this tendency. They say, quote, "That's Luciferic, for heaven's sake. Have nothing to do with it," close quote. But all these things have to be viewed and judged from the most varied angles. We must recognize and squarely acknowledge that, in fact, all the primordial pagan wisdom of humanity arose from a luciferic source. But we also need to study how this took place. And the further back we go in humanity's evolution, the more we find certain people whose reincarnations had equipped them, made them mature enough, to acquaint themselves with the wisdoms possessed by luciferic beings. We speak, for instance, of the seven holy rishis in India. Those initiated into these things in India always drew on the wisdom of the seven holy rishis when they uttered their wisdom, knowing that the true teachers of the rishis were luciferic beings. What the luciferic beings brought with them into earth evolution, with which, as I said, they interwove themselves, was first and foremost always the whole thought world, the intellectual world of thought, the rational world in the best sense, the world of wisdom pervading human culture. If we go back to the origins of humanity, we always find the sources of this pagan wisdom in luciferic beings. We can ask how such a thing can be possible. And here we must be quite clear that the human being would have remained childlike without receiving continual instruction through the mysteries from all kinds of luciferic beings. The essential thing is that those who needed the knowledge, the wisdom required for the education and development of humanity, this inherited primordial wisdom, were not shy, like a modern Philistine, of receiving this wisdom from the luciferic element. But they accepted everything a person must incur if he receives such instruction from the spheres of spirit, from luciferic beings. Above all, the human being had to take on, we might call it an obligation, although such words, of course, can never precisely express what is meant, this luciferic wisdom, which is, of course, cosmic wisdom, to be used as good wisdom in the service of earth evolution, The difference between good wisdom and luciferic wisdom consists in the fact that the good wisdom is in other hands, while luciferic wisdom, whose content is the same, is in luciferic hands. The content is entirely the same. That is the important thing. It is not true to say that there is a wisdom that one can neatly pocket in the inner chamber of the soul to become a good person by means of it. Wisdom is whole and entire in the world. And the difference is only that it can, for instance, be in the hands of wise people who handle it well, or in the hands of angeloi, archangeloi, and so forth, or in the hands of Lucifer. In ancient times, wisdom needed for humanity's progress could not be gained anywhere else, and so the initiates of those days had to receive it from luciferic hands, and had to undertake not to succumb to the other aspirations of these luciferic beings. It was Lucifer's intention to pass wisdom to humanity in order to ensure that instead of undertaking the path of earthly evolution, human beings would pass through evolution in a super-earthly sphere, in a sphere removed from the earth. And so, if I were to draw this schematically, I would say that if this is the surface of the earth here, there's a drawing, the human being ought to take this path when he arrives on earth at this point. The luciferic beings instill their wisdom into the human being, but by doing so, they seek to divert him from the earth, so that he does not pass through earth evolution. Lucifer wants to leave the earth to its fate, unpopulated by humankind. He wants to win over humanity to a distinct realm alien to the Christ realm. The wise initiates of ancient times, who received the primordial wisdom from Lucifer's hands, therefore had to undertake not to submit to Lucifer, but receiving his wisdom, to use it in the service of Earth's evolution. And this is largely what was also accomplished in the mysteries of pre-Christian times. And if you ask what humanity really received in these pre-Christian mysteries, through the influence of the Luciferic beings who first, thus still in the post-Atlantean period, inspired certain individuals, the Indian rishis, and then also sent their grand ambassador to the earth, as I indicated, you find that it is everything which human beings have developed as capacities of speech and thinking. Speaking and thinking, you see, are originally very much Luciferic in nature, except that the wise initiates of primordial times were able to inveigle these arts away from Lucifer. If you wish to flee Lucifer, you'll have to resolve to be silent in future and to refrain from thinking. These things belong to the initiation science that humanity must gradually learn, even though centuries of Philistine education in the civilized world make people draw back fearfully from such truths. For a very long time, people have been indoctrinated with this caricature of Lucifer and Ahriman, identical with the medieval concept of the devil. They have been allowed to grow up in an atmosphere of Philistinism, so that still today they regard these wisdoms only with horror, though they are intimately connected with humanity's evolution. You see, it is awfully pleasant for people to think they are keeping themselves safe from the devil and dedicating themselves to Christ in childlike simplicity. Then they think they will be blessed, and their soul will be saved. But the subterranean depths of human life are not so straightforward. And it is very important for the future of human evolution that these things we have been speaking of now should not be kept from people. It is important to know that the art of speech and the art of thinking were only able to enter this earthly evolution because humankind received them through the mediation of Lucifer. You can still detect the Luciferic element in your thinking today. Ahriman has, meanwhile, long since seized hold of the languages that adapted and diversified according to different regions. Ahriman caused this differentiation, so that original, unified language was brought down into diverse earthly language. Whereas Lucifer always has a tendency to unite and create uniformity, the Ahrimanic principle is pervaded by the tendency for differentiation. What would thinking be like if it were not Luciferic? Well, if thinking were not Luciferic, most people in the world would think like a figure whose thinking was least Luciferic of all, Goethe. Goethe is one of those whose thinking was least Luciferic, and who in certain respects was intent on looking the Luciferic power squarely in the face. But this necessitates adhering as far as possible to specific tangible details. The moment you generalize, standardize, and unify, you are approaching Luciferic thinking. You would only be less susceptible to Luciferic thinking if you were to regard every person, every single animal, every separate plant, each different stone, on its own distinct terms. Focusing your thinking only on each distinct object, rather than comprehending them in terms of species and collective types, not generalizing in any way, not unifying them in general concepts. But if you were to begin doing so already as a child, you'd be kept down in the nursery class, so that is impossible. Instead, you have to recognize that generalized thinking, which was especially current in pagan peoples, will gradually fade altogether. People are now no longer predisposed to make much use of such unifying simplification on the earth. And this is due to the fact that our God-created human nature has gradually developed a greater affinity with the earth, with earthly things, as we evolved. Through this developing affinity with the earth, we are now already, by our very nature, less related to the Luciferic element that seeks to divert us away from the earth. But it would be a poor outlook if human beings were only to relinquish the Luciferic element without anything else replacing it. It would be very bad indeed, for it would mean that they would come to identify entirely with the earth, that is, with the particular territory or region where they are born. Each culture would become entirely differentiated and distinct. We can see this tendency already emerging, developing especially since the beginning of the 19th century. But today, still more since the catastrophic World War, we see an increasing tendency to fragment into ever smaller and smaller groups. Nationalism, national chauvinism, is increasingly becoming prominent. People dividing into ever smaller and smaller groups, until at last such a group could consist of only a single individual. Then, perhaps this individual might go on dividing into a left and a right side and end up in a war with himself, the right side battling with the left. Human evolution is already showing much potential for this, and a counterbalance is needed. We can only counter this tendency with a new wisdom, rather like the primordial wisdom that imbued pagan culture, but now developing through and accomplished by free human will, a new wisdom that can inform earthly culture. This new wisdom must again be initiation wisdom, and must exceed all that can only be encompassed in isolated fashion in each separate individual. And here, we arrive at something that must not be withheld from people today. If, as they develop into the future, they were to do nothing to achieve a new wisdom for themselves, things would occur in the subconscious depths of human nature, which I have to some degree already described to you, that is, the Ahrimanization of all human culture. The culture of humanity would be Ahrimanized, and it would then prove easy for this incarnated Ahriman of whom I spoke to pervade earthly culture with his own being. And for this reason, we must work to hinder all the currents that support and promote our Ahrimanic culture. And what would happen if, for instance, people stayed as they are well on the way to becoming, if, as we recently discussed, they did not grasp, comprehend, and thus lead in the right direction the currents that Ahriman is drawing toward him? In this case, as soon as Ahriman incarnated in the Western world at a particular moment, human culture would become entirely Ahrimanized. And what would Ahriman bring? Employing the most grandiose arts, Ahriman would bring to the human being all that we understand here as clairvoyant knowledge, which so far otherwise has only been gained by the greatest effort and exertion. Just imagine how infinitely comforting this would be. People would not have to do anything themselves. They could go on living their materialistic lives, could eat and drink, or at least could eat as much as remains after the catastrophic war, and would not need to concern themselves with any spiritual striving or mental exertion. The Ahrimanic streams would take their pleasant course. When, at the due moment, Ahriman is incarnated in the Western world, he would found a great secret school where the most grandiose arts of magic would be practiced, and from here all humanity would be showered with everything that can otherwise only be gained through great exertion. It would be Philistine to think that Ahriman, when he comes, will be a kind of mischief-maker, who plays all kinds of tricks on human beings. No, indeed. All those comfort-lovers who reject spiritual science today would succumb to his magic, for through his magic arts he would be able to turn large numbers of people into clairvoyants. But these great clairvoyant gifts would be entirely diverse. What one person sees will be different from what another person does. Confusion would reign, and though people received a foundation of clairvoyant wisdom, they would inevitably fall into conflict through the very different nature of their perceptions. But ultimately, people would be very content with their visions, since each person would be able to see into the world of spirit. And this in turn would mean that all earthly culture would fall prey to Ahriman. Humanity would succumb to Ahriman simply because it had not acquired by its own exertions what Ahriman would then endow it with. It would be the very worst advice imaginable to tell people that they should just stay as they are, that Ahriman will make you all clairvoyant if you desire it. And you will want it, for Ahriman will possess great power. But the consequence of this would be the empire of Ahriman established on earth, the whole earth being Ahrimanized, so that what human culture had achieved hitherto would in a sense be destroyed. What modern humanity today basically already unconsciously, utterly desires would be fulfilled. And so this is the important thing. The future wisdom, which is clairvoyant in nature, must be wrested from Ahriman again. We can say that this book of wisdom is only one, not two wisdoms. It is only a question of whether Ahriman holds the book or Christ. Christ cannot have it unless humanity fights for it. And humanity can only fight for it by recognizing that by the time Ahriman appears on earth, it must have acquired this content of spiritual science by its own exertions. This, you see, is the cosmic work of spiritual science. It consists of preventing the knowledge of the future from becoming Ahrimanic, or from remaining so. Excluding from one's religious practice anything of the nature of knowledge, continually and repeatedly emphasizing instead that simple faith is entirely sufficient, is a good way of cooperating with Ahriman. If you go no further than this simple faith, you are condemning yourself to dullness and torpidity of soul. And then the wisdom that should, in a sense, be wrested from Ahriman cannot penetrate you. So it is not a matter of humanity simply receiving the wisdom of the future, but of humanity working to acquire it, and of those who do this undertaking to save the culture of the earth, saving earthly culture for Christ, just as the ancient rishis and initiates undertook not to succumb to Lucifer's aim of alienating humanity from the earth. Now, what is the essential aspect of these things for human feeling? The essential thing is that for the wisdom of the future, too, we have to struggle in a way similar to the initiates of very ancient times, who mediated to human beings the capacity for speech and for thinking, necessarily achieved by opposition to Lucifer. Just as these initiates of primordial wisdom had to wrest from Lucifer what became human reason, so insight into the inner nature of things, as it will be in future, must be wrested from the Ahrimanic powers. These things are strongly at play between the lines of life and are already playing into life today. Recently, I read a piece written by a friend of the Anthroposophic movement shortly before his death. He was wounded in the war and lay in a military hospital for a long time. During the various operations he underwent, he gained glimpses of the world of spirit. But the last lines he left contain a remarkable passage in which he describes what he experienced shortly before death. Among his last experiences was one in which everything spread around him in the atmosphere turned, as he put it, into, in quotes, granite, very dense and stony. It is as if heavy granite is pressing on his soul. We have to understand such an expression, and we can understand it if we know that we need to battle for the wisdom of the future, which the Ahrimanic powers will not so easily allow to be wrested from them. One ought not to imagine that wisdom will simply be granted us in voluptuous visions. True wisdom must, as I said recently in a public lecture, be, quote, acquired in suffering, close quote. And this suffering of a dying man I have described to you is really a very good picture of it. You see, in struggling for the wisdom of the future, one of the most common experiences is precisely this, that the world around you presses in upon you as if the air were suddenly to turn to granite. It is possible to understand the nature of such experiences. We need only consider that the Ahrimanic powers are endeavoring to render the earth entirely rigid. They would be victorious if they succeeded in completely rigidifying earth, water, air, and so forth. And then the earth could not evolve back to the warmth condition from which it originally evolved at the stage of old Saturn. The intention is that it should attain this warmth condition again at the time of Vulcan. And the endeavor of Ahrimanic powers is to prevent this happening. We are on a knife edge, which could begin to be decided in the present era if human souls failed to find enthusiasm for the spiritual content of spiritual science. Then human souls, in their laxness and laziness and love of ease, would give the first impetus for the earth to rigidify. If you consider that the real aim of Ahrimanic powers lies in this rigidification, then it will scarcely surprise you that this contraction, constriction of life, this granite-like pressure, is one of the experiences that will have to be undergone in the battle for the wisdom of the future. We must realize that people can prepare themselves in the present to see into the world of spirit by first using their healthy common sense to comprehend what spiritual science seeks to bring them. The effort brought to such study, governed by the faculty of healthy human reason, can already be part of the struggle that will lead them into receiving visions from the world of spirit. And there are various things to overcome in the process. For people today, this effort is initially so arduous because in seeking to understand spiritual science, they must battle against the granite nature of their own skulls. If their skulls were not tough as granite, spiritual science would find far wider acceptance today. Much more prudent than all Philistine execration of Ahrimanic powers would be to battle against Ahriman in this way. This struggle cannot be Philistine, in fact, but must involve an honest, authentic study of spiritual scientific content. And then human beings would gradually gain spiritual vision, awareness, and feeling of what would otherwise come about physically on earth, of rigidification, of graniteization. And this is why people today are disinclined to approach spiritual science. It is out of cowardice. They are unaware of this, but it is so. Fear and cowardice of what lurks in wait, of what they will have to endure in their endeavors. Time and time again you hear it said that people go to anthroposophic meetings to seek elevation, and by this they often mean a reveling in inner voluptuousness. This cannot be on offer, for it would lull people into dull slumber and distance them from the light that they need. The essential thing is that as the near future approaches, from this present time onward, people must not be kept in the dark as to the real driving forces of human evolution. People must recognize that human beings live in a kind of equilibrium between luciferic and Ahrimanic powers, and that the Christ being has really become their companion, in a sense, a confederate, firstly leading them out of the battle with Lucifer and then into the battle with Ahriman. Human evolution altogether must be seen in the light of these realities. Someone who characterizes the mysteries of the world as spiritual science must do is sometimes greatly ridiculed. In my book titled Theosophy, for instance, I inevitably had to describe things in terms of their sevenfold nature, and was ridiculed for it. Tomorrow I will speak of another thing that elicited ridicule. But people do not think it ridiculous to divide the colors of the rainbow into seven, or the octave into seven intervals, prime, second, third, and so forth, with the octave as the recapitulation of the prime. In the physical realm, people accept such categories, but dismiss them utterly when it comes to spiritual truths. And what we must work hard to comprehend again, in this way, was once intrinsic to primordial pagan wisdom. In the school of Pythagoras, which was a mystery school, in fact, we see a last gleam of this original pagan wisdom. You can read in every schoolbook about Pythagoras, but will not discover there any comprehension of why Pythagoras constructed the world order on number. In fact, it was because original wisdom founded everything on number. But the last ember of insight into the wisdom of number still glowed when Pythagoras founded his school. Other aspects of primordial wisdom survived longer, some of it even into the 16th and 17th centuries. For instance, up to the 15th and 16th centuries, one can still find some rational accounts of physical aspects of reality that relate to higher worlds. And then, if I can put it like this, humanity's ur-intellect gradually fades away altogether. Imagine we had lurking in some corner here a real proponent of modern education, who thought you anthroposophists here were being fooled with complete nonsense. Our era, we might say, boasts such glorious achievements. What on earth does it mean to say that original wisdom has dried up? In recent centuries, we have achieved many great things, things of great grandeur. Even if 1914 marks the end of it, until then, at least culture developed glorious achievements. But if you look without preconceptions at what we have acquired and developed in most recent times, you will find this certainly. People have compiled all kinds of scientific, descriptive, and historical accounts. Compilation, the gathering of facts, has indeed become fashionable. They have undertaken experiments, too, and have described these. But ask yourselves whether anything produced in recent times contains any new ideas or concepts. Certain isolated minds, like Goethe, have produced new ideas and concepts, but Goethe was not understood. If you closely examine science or even recent historical research, you will find that the ideas at work there are not new. Yes, Darwin undertook his voyages, and described many things that he saw, then compiled and formulated them as an idea. But if you examine the minutest details of the idea of evolution, you will find it exists already in the writings of the Greek thinker Anaxagoras. And the most important ideas in modern science were already present in pre-Christian times in the works of Aristotle. These ideas are a store of primordial wisdom drawn from a luciferic source. But this source of original wisdom must gradually dry up, and new wisdom, in the form of insights into the world of spirit, must be won by great effort. For this to happen, human beings need a degree of willingness to accept things that are working directly toward truly new ideas. In particular, modern humanity needs new ideas in relation to the soul. Scientific ideas about the psyche today are basically mere words. When modern academics today speak of the will, of thinking, of feeling, this is really nothing but a kaleidoscopic scattering of words, a kind of squeezing out of words, of word sounds, signifying little. People are not in the least concerned to give serious consideration to truly new inquiries. In this respect, one can have some really odd experiences. A while back, I was invited to give a talk to a Schopenhauer Society in Dresden. A Schopenhauer Society, that sounds very interesting, I thought. And so I tried to characterize the contrast between sleeping and waking, between waking up and falling asleep, in psychological terms. As I recently described this to you too, I was trying to explain how the, in quotes, zero point is present initially only at the moment of waking up or falling asleep. How sleep is not just a cessation of waking life, but relates to it as debts to assets. If you were to look through modern psychology to learn something about this, you would not even find the beginning of an attempt to broach these wide-ranging matters. After my talk in a supposed discussion, various people stood up to speak, educated people. One of them drew the following conclusion. He said that nothing they had heard could be considered part of serious scientific inquiry, and that serious science should concern itself with other matters. What I had said apparently had nothing to do with necessary research, with things they wanted to know, for close scrutiny would show them not to be new truths at all, but matters they had long known about. In other words, what they did not wish to know, and what was in no way part of their science, must be things long known about. Now, of course, real contradictions do exist, but contradictions of this kind exist only in the heads of modern academics. If someone says that certain things cannot be known and do not form the subject of human knowledge, all well and good. But if he says at the same time that these things have long been known and are therefore of no interest, this is a crass contradiction. Conflating two judgments like this is something modern academics often habitually do. But such thinking is responsible for something intrinsic to our era. Thanks to the divine powers, and thanks also, if you will forgive me, to Lucifer and Ahriman, an individual is not ultimately completely idiotic. And yet there is a huge gulf between this truth and discussing such matters in public. A person may comprehend something of these things, and may sometimes form a view of them that is by no means wide of the mark. But to move on from this point to speaking of it publicly in an appropriate way is a very long road indeed. While many gladly immerse themselves in spiritual science, engaging in it within the confines of a more sect-like kind of society, when they are in the public domain again and ought to present matters about which the world produces its documents and its testimonies, The whole thing vanishes in smoke. And then they become good citizens of the land of Philistinism again. But this in turn decisively supports the progress of Ahriman. That is the end of Lecture 15 and the end of the book, the 15 lectures of the book, Understanding Society Through Spiritual Scientific Knowledge, Social Threefolding, Christ, Lucifer, and Ahriman, translated by Matthew Barton, by Rudolf Steiner, Collected Works, Volume 191.